You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Daniel. And now here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through the book of Daniel, chapters 1 and 2.
Notice Daniel's concern was to not defile himself. Defile means to taint, to pollute. The term is the opposite of the word purity. Daniel didn't want anyone to question his loyalty to God. Thus, he refused to say anything or act in any way that would cast an aspersion on his devotion to the Lord. Daniel couldn't help what had happened to him. His captivity, his place, his name, the strange customs and language, his new occupation. But he could control what he put in his mouth. The food he ate, the libations he drank. They were his choice. He wanted to be sure that no one mistook where he stood with God. Being a Jew, Daniel was bound by the Old Testament dietary laws. To ignore these laws would have been to disobey God. And certainly the king's diet was far from kosher. In addition to being non-kosher, the food served to Daniel would have been officially dedicated to the nation's idols. Thus, to eat from the king's table could be interpreted as participating in the worship of Babylon's false gods. It wasn't a matter of how far he could compromise and still please God. Daniel didn't want to run the risk of defiling himself or offending God in any way. He didn't want to be mistaken in any way of defiling his God. You know, it's true, we all swim in a sea of culture. And we're all assimilated to some extent into a certain way of life. Daniel spoke like a Babylonian, dressed like a Babylonian, learned Babylonian protocol, attended a Babylonian university, answered to a Babylonian name. And I guess you could say all that was okay. But Daniel never became a Babylonian at heart. That was the difference. Daniel was still governed by God's values. And he still watched over his appetites to make sure they were pleasing to God. Daniel knew where to draw the line. Do you know where to draw the line? See, he wouldn't compromise his allegiance to God just to eat at Nebuchadnezzar's table. Daniel respected the king and his position, but he bowed only to God. He put his fate and his faith into God's hands, not in the king's. Here is the question. Who's your daddy, Daniel? See, anyone who knew him realized that God was his daddy. God was his authority. But that's the question we need to get asked tonight. Who's our daddy? If we really trust God, why are we cutting corners? Or lowering our standards? Or cozying up to sin? Who's your daddy? Who's your authority? Daniel refused to let the king dictate what he ate. He stayed loyal, and he consumed only what pleased God. But notice again verse 8. We're told Daniel requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. This is so instructional. Daniel doesn't pick at the cafeteria. He doesn't go on a hunger strike. He doesn't turn over his tray. He doesn't get mad at the Babylonians that they don't share his convictions. I mean, what do you expect from pagans? Daniel realized that in a secular society, folks are more pragmatic than they are principled. Though he's taking a stand for God, and though he says so, he doesn't want to be defiled, he tells them. Nevertheless, Daniel now appeals to their pragmatism. Verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. Again, Ashkenaz is a practical guy. I mean, he's pretty fond of Daniel, but why should he expect to risk his neck over Daniel's convictions? There aren't his convictions, they're Daniel's. So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he, Ashpenaz, consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. Again, I like this. Daniel doesn't just agitate the authorities to get their cooperation. Rather, he navigates. He even negotiates. You know, sometimes we Christians, we climb up on our self-righteous high horse to point out what's wrong with our boss or our authorities. We're quick to scream persecution when in reality the world just doesn't understand our convictions. And we don't offer them an alternative first. See, that's what Daniel did. He offered them a pragmatic alternative that would allow him to stay principled. Here Daniel proposes a test. And it's not just about his convictions, it's also about Babylon's objectives. The king wants healthy civil servants. So Daniel gives the king what he wants as well as pleases God. He basically says, hey, let's set aside a 10-day trial. Us Hebrews, we'll eat off the value menu. We'll get our veggies and drink Evian. While you Babylonian candidates, you can have the Babel burgers and the Babel brews. And if the Hebrews turn out fuller and fitter, then who's to complain? Everyone will be happy. Daniel will have a clear conscience. Nebuchadnezzar will have healthy helpers. And God will get glorified through Daniel's faith. Here's a more modern example. The sales manager wants you to, tinker with the truth just a little bit to sell the product. Tell a few lies. No big deal. It'll boost the sales. What he wants is income, whereas what God wants is honesty. Thus, why don't you propose a test? Let the other guys do it the boss's way for 10 days while you do it God's way. And at the end of the 10 days, let's see who sells the most. The point is, don't just mandate, navigate these situations. Trust God. Hey, you as a believer can put the pressure on God. If he wants you to be in that job, trust me, he'll work it out. Again, who's your daddy? Dare to be a Daniel, for God always looks out for his children. Reminds me of 1 Corinthians 10. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Verse 15 tells us the results of Daniel's test. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. The plan worked. And understand, there's no biological reason a vegetarian diet would make a noticeable difference in just 10 days. It was God's blessing on these young men that won the victory. And that blessing remained on Daniel's conviction and faith for the whole 3 years of Nebuchadnezzar's brainwashing. Daniel 1 teaches us a lesson for negotiating secular surroundings. Capitulate, no. Navigate, yes. Well, the story ends. As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Obviously, it wasn't just the diet that brought such blessing. It was their God. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30 tells us, "The Lord God of Israel says, those who honor me, I will honor." And that was certainly the case with Daniel and his three friends. Verse 21 tells us, "Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus." And this is amazing. This puts the exclamation point on the story. Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom will eventually fall to the Persian King Cyrus. And guess who Cyrus employs in his new government? an old man named Daniel. You see, because he refused to bow to Nebuchadnezzar's rules and stayed true to his God, Daniel outlived Babylon. God blessed Daniel over Babel. It proves the truth of 1 John chapter 2, verse 17. The world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Which brings us to chapter 2. Now, in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, the date now, 602 BC, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. In other words, he was so startled by his dream, it was so vivid that he couldn't go back to sleep. And when the king can't sleep, nobody sleeps. For then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said to them, I have had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. At the time, Nebuchadnezzar was a young general, fresh off military conquest. His father, Nabopolassar, had died while Nebuchadnezzar was in battle. Nebuchadnezzar had ceased fighting and he had returned home to take the crown. Well, Nebuchadnezzar had long wondered about his father's counselors, these magicians, these soothsayers, these sorcerers who claimed to have psychic powers. You see, Nabopolassar was a superstitious idolater. He kept these wizards around to consult the stars and to give him advice, but the young Nebuchadnezzar was skeptical and he decided to use this dream to test their credibility. Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. Now, that's an interesting detail. It prompts a side note. From chapter 2, verse 4, now through the end of chapter 7, the original text of the book is written in Aramaic, not Hebrew. Aramaic was the language of the Babylonian court in Daniel's day. And since the content of this section that we'll now be studying deals mostly with Gentile kingdoms, it was written in Aramaic. In chapter 8, when the focus returns back to the Jews, the language of the text also reverts back to Hebrew. Just interesting. Nebuchadnezzar's wizards greet him. O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation. You see, these sorcerers, these Harry Potters of Babylon, they had their occultic manuals, their secret symbolism that they would use to decode dreams. They're asking him to tell them the dream. They're going to look it up in their books and they're going to, you know, just sort of, you know, put together the interpretation and spit it back to him. But they're surprised in verse 5. For the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made an ash heap. The king offers a nice incentive program here. I mean, this guy ain't messing around. Verse 6. However, if you tell the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give its interpretation. They're saying, you must not have heard us correctly, king. Tell us the dream first. The king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there's only one decree for you. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such a thing of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. In essence, they're admitting that their whole profession was a charade. Well, wait a minute. You need a hotline to God to discern both the dream and its interpretation. Yet that's exactly what they claim they had. Verse 12. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. They weren't so wise anyway. And so the decree went out and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Apparently, Daniel wasn't in the palace at the time. Perhaps he was on vacation or maybe on a business trip. But boy, he's in trouble too. He's one of these magicians. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, "Why is the decree from the king so urgent?" Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation. Now Daniel must have had Nebuchadnezzar's respect. For one, he gets an immediate audience, and then he's able to buy some time, time that the king wasn't willing to give the others. But Daniel knows he's now on the clock. He's got to deliver. It's time to pray. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. You wonder, was Daniel a great man of faith, or was he just a man with nothing to lose? He's probably both. He relays the scenario to them, and they all start to pray. And I would imagine they were praying a fervent, passionate prayer. But notice the next verse. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. But notice this. Don't trip over this. Before Daniel got the answer, he fell asleep. It came to him in a night vision. He got it while he was asleep. Can you imagine facing the same scenario and being able to go to sleep? Hey, if ever there was an occasion for an all-night prayer vigil, this was it. I would have been praying and pacing. I wasn't about to go to sleep until God gave me the answer. And guess what? I would have missed out on God's answer had I not gone to sleep. It was not just Daniel's prayer that God responded to. It was Daniel's faith. Daniel had the faith to pray, but then he had the faith to leave it in God's hands and rest well and go to sleep. God responded to his confident, faith-filled sleep as well as to his passionate and fervent prayer. I find that interesting. Verse 20 tells us, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever. For wisdom and might are his, and he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God, my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might and have now made known to me what we ask of you. For you have made known to us the king's demand." He offers this beautiful praise. God is sovereign and God speaks. He reveals secrets. He gives wisdom. Reminds me of James chapter 1, verse 5. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Well, Daniel asked, and God gave. Well, therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and he said thus to them, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation." Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation." Notice this Arioch, he's a typical government bureaucrat. He's trying to squeeze out of this situation just a little bit of credit for himself. "I have found the man." Here he is. Verse 26. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king, but there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. He has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these." Ironically, Arioch tried to take the credit, but Daniel was quick to give the credit to God. There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. Daniel doesn't have any prognosticating powers. What he knows is what God has revealed. And two, he says that the king's dream and vision are for the latter days. This is a technical term in the Bible that speaks of the time just prior to Jesus' second coming. Whenever we see the latter days, we can think of the future. He begins in verse 29. "As for you, O king, thoughts come to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. You, O king, were watching, and behold a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." Verse 36, "This is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king." Now the king saw this tall image. How high? We're not sure. But it's interesting, when Nebuchadnezzar tries to build a replica of what he's seen here in chapter 2, in chapter 3, he builds it 90 feet tall. Daniel sees this metallic man. He has a head of gold. He has a torso, a chest and arms of silver. He has an abdomen, belly and thighs of bronze. He has legs of iron. He has feet mixed of iron mixed with clay. It's like a robo image, something out of a sci-fi movie. And notice the metals are progressive. From top to bottom, they get heavier. In other words, this image is top heavy, which makes it very fragile at the bottom. You've heard the expression clay feet? Now you know where the idiom comes from. And notice the stone. It's cut out without hands. That's another way of saying it's of supernatural origin. Man has nothing to do with this. This stone strikes the image in the feet, and the whole enchilada crumbles. The gold, the silver, the bronze, the iron, the clay are crushed into dust and blown away, but in its place, the stone that struck the image becomes a great mountain. Perhaps Nebuchadnezzar saw Stone Mountain rising up in the place of that image. This is what Nebuchadnezzar saw, but what in the world does it mean? Well, Daniel also has the answer.
If you spent time in Sunday school at any point in your childhood, you probably learned about Daniel and the lion's den, or his friends surviving being thrown into a fiery furnace. These stories and more are found in the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, and are accompanied by more tales of God's miraculous provision and men who refuse to compromise in the face of persecution and even death. Daniel and his friends knew who their creator was and why he deserved to be worshipped, even when they didn't fully understand his plan. If you found yourself in a situation where you are confronted for your faith, would you follow Daniel's example? Would you stand for God even with an uncertain and dangerous future ahead? God is worthy of that kind of faith, and He won't leave you to fight alone. He'll be right there with you. We're so glad you tuned in to Study Daniel with Pastor Sandy Adams today. If you'd like to hear more from this book or explore other messages from Sandy Adams Radio, visit our website at sandyadams.org. You'll find a list of all the books of the Bible Pastor Sandy has taught from as you scroll down the page, and you're welcome to download and share them with friends and family. We'd also encourage you to get our mobile app to have sound Bible teaching with you wherever you go. That website again is sandyadams.org. Thanks for tuning in today to Sandy Adams Radio.